Which...
I'm deeply regretting suggesting this as a topic. We have made a tremendous mistake.
This was all you, KP.
But I have terrible judgment, so why would you let me do something like this?
Welcome to Lawyers Behaving Badly. I am Jennifer Judge.
I'm Karen Delaney. Welcome back. We have both returned.
Unfortunately, God.
Yeah, to the state of Texas. God damn it.
It was so wonderful in where we were in Colorado. Like, the weather was glorious. It was so hard coming back. And my husband and I just watched the temperature tick up because we drove.
Yeah.
Just watched the temperature tick up and up and up as we drove home that day. And it was awful.
Your pictures of Ouray are stunning. I haven't been to Telluride in literally like decades, probably since I was a kid. I don't think I've ever been to Ouray, and now it's like top of my list.
It was, someone had told me, like, it's called the Switzerland of the U.S. because it sits in this valley.
Mm-hmm.
And like the pictures, you look at it online, when you look it up, you're like, that can't be real. No, it's real. Like, it is possibly the most beautiful place I've ever been. We're already planning how to get back there. It was gorgeous. And even the kids loved every minute of it. So it lives up to the billing. Don't go there so it doesn't stay crowded, but you should know that it's beautiful.
You said your kids loved every minute of it. Does that include the 10-mile forced hike or whatever?
That was Telluride, to be fair. No.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, fair enough.
We drove over to Telluride and we like took the ski lift up to the top of the mountain. And so what we do is we just like take the ski lift up and then you take like whatever little hike down to back mm-hmm. to the little ski village. And there was one that was like 2.2 miles. And we're like, oh, let's do that one. That will be fun. And so we did it. And I have like my watch tracking, you know, just like I'm exercising. It's a hike. And I hit like 2.5 miles and we were nowhere near the bottom and we couldn't see anything.
You're like, oh.
Yeah, exactly. And we were like, huh. And then, like, we could see storms. You know, it's monsoon season in that part mm-hmm. of Colorado, and it storms every afternoon. And we could mm-hmm. see, like, storms building in the background. It ended up being almost 5 miles. So by the time we finished, like, we were probably 500 yards from our car. And my youngest, like, tripped and turned his ankle. And he was already, like, just barely holding it together. He was doing a great job. He was a trooper. But he tripped and turned his ankle. And he just, like, collapsed in tears. And, you know, the one part he was like, oh, my God, buddy, I'm so sorry. You're going to be okay. And mentally, you're like, God damn it. We were so
so close. You were so close.
And so we, like, carried his backpack for him. And my husband and I were, like, looking up at the sky with one eye, like, looking at the rain moving closer. And we're like, you can do it, guy. Come on. So we made it. Everyone was safe. And we made a happy family memory. We're already joking about the time they forced the kids on a death march down a ski mountain. But you were in Colorado, too. And we haven't had a chance to catch up on your stuff. Tell me all about it.
I know. So we went back to Vail. We were there a couple of years ago, and we have a little place we like to stay there that's kind of ratty, honestly, but it's a great location. There's the little creek, Gore Creek, that runs through Vail is right out the back of the place that we stay, and so I could sit on our little patio and have a glass of wine while I watched the river go by, and the swimming pool at this condo place also overlooks Gore Creek too. So that's really nice. And then it was also great because my six-year-old he's at that age where there are more activities opening mm-hmm. us up to us that are really fun. And so mm-hmm. my husband took him back to Denver one day to go to a Rockies game. Mm-hmm. And they did the whole thing where they got there really early to watch practice and see if they could get a baseball or a card signed, which they didn't. And then they stayed for most of the game. They left, I think, maybe bottom of the seventh or something because it was getting too hot. But it was really special for them mm-hmm. to go do that. And I had big feelings about it, too, because it's like, our kids are finally at the age where you hope that they're going to remember mm-hmm. some of this stuff and it's going to be a core memory and something really special that he can treasure about his relationship yes. with his dad. And then I just had the day in Vail with my four-year-old, which doesn't happen very often that we're kind of peeled off separately from each other. And so the great thing about Vail is that there's free bus service there to pretty much anywhere you want to go. So we just hopped on the bus. We went to one of the amazing, fabulous playgrounds there. We did quote unquote hiking, which is where we just walked along a path because he did a camping unit recently in preschool and he got really excited about it. So he was all jazzed to go quote unquote hiking. We had lunch together and like he played in some of the fountains there. We just had ourselves a really nice day too. So that was fantastic. And then we went out to Avon and did some paddle boating one of the days we were there. And all of these places have adventure centers at the top of the mountain. Yep. So the kids went and did trampoline bungee.
Yep.
Yeah. And the alpine roller coaster and zip lining and all that kind of stuff. So we had a great time and it was absolutely necessary to get out of the heat. I maintain that one of the few ways you can live in a place like Texas, if you have the means, is to abscond from the state.
Not be in Texas is in to the leave. State of August. Yes.
Yes. Leave and go somewhere cooler to escape this absolutely oppressive heat. And we flew. And so, of course, when we landed at Love Field, we were like...
That beating of when you get off onto the jetway and it just is this oppressive heat that hits
furnace.
You. Yes, it's awful.
0 out of 10, don't recommend.
Yeah.
So now we're back and tomorrow is the start of first grade and pre-K.
Oh my God, y'all start tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
We don't start till Tuesday, so a week from today from when we're recording. I can't believe that. That's tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. We would meet the teacher last night for first grade. Oh my God,
you're a kindergartner.
No, I don't. Oh, no, no. Kinder's over. I have a first grader and a pre-K.
You're right. Your youngest still has one more year of pre-K. I thought he was going into kinder.
Yeah, but he was in the preschool class and now he's moving to pre-K. And that's a big deal that we're having lots of big feelings about. Even though he's staying in the same building and he'll be staying with a lot of classmates. He's just had a really wonderful time with his preschool teachers and it's been a great year. So he's... a little bit nervous about that transition, but I know he'll do great. So we have big things on the horizon tomorrow.
I can't believe that. I'm so excited for you. We have meet the teacher on Friday and then school starts on Tuesday for us. But my kids are at the age where like I ask them, you know, how's your day going? And they're like, it's great because I only have a few days left until school starts. And then my life is over. So they're savoring their last few days of summer.
Yeah.
I was saving one update for you so we could talk about it briefly, but I have now officially watched everything except the last 30 minutes of the Vanderpump Rules reunion. So all I have is the infamous last 30 minutes of the reunion, but otherwise I am
I was going to say, but you haven't seen the last 30 minutes.
I know what the last, I mean, you and I know spoilers, like we do spoilers. So I know what the last 30 minutes are, but even knowing all of everything that happened, I still can't tell you how many times I just sat there slack jawed.
I know, watching totally dumbfounded. It. Yes.
Absolutely dumbfounded.
Yes. They're terrible people.
Tom absolutely Raquel. Terrible people.
Raquel has dead shark eyes. I don't know what's like behind them or what's going on, but every time I look at her, I just think of a shark with those dead black eyes that they have in their heads.
I keep trying to like psychoanalyze her too, because I'm like, is she really that stupid that she doesn't understand, or is she just dead inside? Like, I can't decide what's going on with her. Sandoval's evil and we hate him.
Yeah, and we hate him.
He is literally a worm with a mustache. That's now like I've seen that and I love it. James Kennedy is a hot mess, but he's wonderful TV.
I was gonna say James Kennedy, extremely problematic, yet also extremely hilarious.
So hilarious. When he got up to fight Sandoval and knocked down Andy's cards, and Andy was like, "My cards." I loved that. So I know I have like the most important 30 minutes left, but it has like my life. I'll have a little empty hole in my life when this is over.
I know.
Because it has been quality drama. So if you like reality TV and you have not watched Vanderpump Rules, and I was so skeptical about them to begin with, take it from me. It is 100% worth the effort.
Yeah. And I never do this because I'm prematurely old and like to be in bed before 10 p.m. these days. But when I got close to the end of the season, I think I told you I stayed up until almost 3 o'clock in the morning. And my kids are up at like 6 or 6:30 every morning. So there was no, you know, weekend sleeping in or anything. Mm-hmm. It was just like I got 2.5 or 3 hours of sleep and then accosted my husband in the kitchen to fill him in on the updates. And I never do stuff like that, but I had to. I had to finish it. It was like just wild.
It was absolutely wild. And knowing, especially going in, knowing the background and knowing what's going on, so you know to watch people's expressions. Yes. And you know, just like we've talked about, like, obviously Raquel thought Tom and Ariana were going to break up, and she looked absolutely dumbfounded when Ariana was talking about how she wants to stay with Tom. I mean, it was just, it's quality television. Everyone should watch it.
Absolutely amazing. Highly recommend. I'm so glad you're close to finishing it.
Yeah. So next episode, we will discuss the final part of it, because I've seen snippets of it. And just like you said, her dead shark eyes, they like make me physically uncomfortable. So I can't wait to watch and have
feelings about it. Yeah, I feel like I need to go back and review it.
Yeah.
For just do my due diligence here, my homework.
Your homework for this.
Yeah, I'll take notes.
Well, I think you have our next story, and so we're kind of doing a switcheroo this tonight, and I think our longer story is going first, and then I'm going to cap it off with a fun little hot toppy.
Yeah, this isn't like a full story like we would normally do, but it turns out we're busy and getting crushed with work, and we wanted to talk about these things, and I had seen some stories that I hadn't paid much attention to about Judge Pauline Newman, who is a judge on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit. And there was news, I think right before I went on vacation, about her status with that court. And that's been kind of an ongoing saga this spring. But what made me sit up and take notice of this particular story was one of her judicial clerks, who is a lawyer. So by way of background, Pauline Newman has been a judge on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit since 1984. And she has been called, by whom I do not know, but this is what Wiki tells me, the Federal Circuit's most prolific dissenter. And current Chief Judge Kimberly Moore said that many of Judge Newman's dissents later went on to become the law, either en banc from the Federal Circuit itself or from the Supreme Court. And she apparently helped create the Federal Circuit when it was established under Reagan. She was the first judge to be appointed directly to the Federal Circuit. At the time, all of the other judges had come by way of merger of the Court of Customs and Patent Appeals and the Appellate Division of the U.S. Court of Federal Claims. What is relevant for recent goings on at the Federal Circuit is that Judge Newman is at this point 96 years old and the oldest supposedly active federal judge in the history of the United States. Judge Newman says that in March 2023, the chief judge of the Federal Circuit met with Judge Newman and tried to convince her to retire. And Judge Newman was like, no, thank you. I will not be doing that. In late March 2023, the chief judge entered an order identifying a complaint related to Judge Newman based on information that she had engaged in conduct prejudicial to the effective and expeditious administration of the court's business and essentially was unable to discharge all of the duties of her office by reason of mental or physical disability. That complaint was based on information that I guess came from other judges and court staff related to extensive delays in resolving her case, her caseload, and her apparent inability to complete her opinions in a timely fashion. And then information indicating that she appeared to suffer from some sort of cognitive impairment. Mm-hmm. At this point in March 2023, her workload had already been significantly reduced because, according to the Federal Circuit, she had a heart attack in mid-2021 and her workload was reduced at that point. In May 2022, she had some sort of fainting spell, and her workload was further reduced. Yet even with this reduced workload, she was experiencing significant delays mm-hmm. in getting opinions timely issued. The chief judge, apparently, when she met with Judge Newman to ask her to retire, that was kind of like an attempt at an informal resolution yeah. of these complaints. Like, yeah, you know, we can just let this go and you can retire.
Exactly. And take the hint, retire, and it all goes yeah. away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, you've had a heart attack at 94. Like, retire. It's okay.
I mean, have you met people who are in their 90s? Sorry yeah. to be ageist. I don't think they need to be judges.
The 80-year-old shouldn't be president, so I don't think 90-year-olds should be judges.
Sure. Sure. So in late March, the chief judge of the Federal Circuit appointed a special committee to investigate the complaint and to put together a report and recommendation to the Judicial Council, essentially about whether Judge Newman is able to effectively carry out her duties or whether she has an impairment that prevents her from doing so. Chief Judge Moore is required to be on that panel, and she also appointed two other judges on the Federal Circuit, Prost and Toronto. I don't know how to pronounce these names, so sorry if mm-hmm. I get them wrong. The Federal Circuit recently produced a report about all of this, and part of what they talk about is how much her productivity has significantly declined over time. So from October 2021 through March 2023, they say Judge Newman authored less than half the opinions of an active judge. She authored 28 compared to 61 for an average judge. Her opinions took about four times as long to issue, 199 days versus 53 days. From May 2022 through April 2023, she sat on half as many cases as her colleagues, 65 compared to 129. She took four times as long to write half the opinions while sitting on half the number of cases as her colleagues. Moreover, despite having no new cases assigned for what is now 6 months, not sitting on motions panels, and having three law clerks and a judicial assistant, Judge Newman still has a backlog of seven opinions that have not issued, and they now average 230 days old.
Wow.
Which isn't necessarily surprising for somebody who's 96.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, everybody's got to be able to pull their weight, right?
I was about to say, well, yeah, work has to be done. And if she's not doing right. it, someone has to, or justice isn't done.
Yeah, and it's really unfair to litigants mm-hmm. to drag these disputes out. So that's where the investigation starts. I mean, a fairly limited scope. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of April, the scope of the investigation expands. This is because Judge Newman had a law clerk working in her chambers who apparently was regularly contacting Judge Newman's judicial assistant, who apparently has a paralegal background mm-hmm. and does sort of paralegal type administrative stuff for chambers. This law clerk was regularly contacting the judicial assistant in the middle of the night on both work matters and personal matters.
Oh.
And one example of this is supposedly this law clerk called the assistant at 3 o'clock in the morning demanding a personal wake-up call at 6 a.m.
Okay.
And this law clerk is somebody who's been working as Judge Newman's clerk for several years.
Yeah, it's one of the permanent clerks, not
an
annual clerk, yeah.
The court has an employment dispute resolution plan that's supposed to allow for the confidential resolution of issues like this. Mm-hmm. So this situation makes its way to the chief judge. The chief judge emails Judge Newman about it. Like, hey, mm-hmm. your law clerk is calling your judicial assistant at 3 o'clock in the morning demanding wake-up calls.
Like, put a stop to that.
Yeah, like that seems like it shouldn't be happening. Judge Newman responds, according to the Federal Circuit, and she basically dismisses the issue outright as a difference in personal preferences, which seems like an inadequate response.
I mean, yes, it is a personal preference not to be called at 3 a.m. and wanting a wake-up call 3 hours later.
That is a personal preference.
Yeah.
There is a somewhat larger problem, however, which is, instead of responding to the chief judge, Judge Newman addresses her email to the all judges list.
Oh, no.
This list doesn't just go to judges. It goes to chambers staff. It goes to a bunch of other employees. 95 people in total. So that completely violates the confidentiality provisions of the Employment Dispute Resolution mm-hmm. Program. And now pretty much everybody in the whole courthouse knows.
Oh, my God.
The Federal Circuit's general counsel recommends that IT tries to claw back the email, mm-hmm. which they did. But there's no way for anybody to know how many of the 95 recipients
got and read the email already. Mm-hmm.
A few days later, the Federal Circuit's general counsel goes to the chief judge's chambers and they call Judge Newman's law clerk, who is calling the assistant in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. The law clerk asks to record the call.
Okay.
I saw that and I was like, don't be suspicious. Don't yeah. be suspicious.
Don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious.
They graciously agree that she can record the call. According to the GC's affidavit, the chief judge asks the law clerk if she's willing to refrain from making after-hours calls temporarily. Like, let's get this, just like stop making calls temporarily. Let us get this sorted. Just don't do this for right now.
The least imposing request possible.
Seems absolutely reasonable.
Yes.
This is a quote from the affidavit of the general counsel of the Federal Circuit, and the clerk's name is redacted. So redacted did not agree to that, saying she would need to think about it and could not give a time frame to provide a response. Chief Judge Moore then asked redacted if she was willing to refrain from making after hours calls to the assistant just for that day. And redacted again did not agree, repeating that she would have to think about it.
What?
So that's April 10th, 2023.
She's like, literally, they're like, just go 24 hours without an obnoxious late night call. And she was like, no, thank you.
Yes.
I'm not interested in that. Thank you.
She's like, not making calls, pass. Not making calls, pass. Making calls, smash. The committee also gets wind that this same law clerk has apparently been doing the judge's grocery shopping, driving her around to medical appointments. In the meantime, the committee investigating Judge Newman's fitness has requested various information about her, including her medical condition. It's asked her to get a medical evaluation. They've asked to sit down and interview her. There's a lot of detail, and this goes on for a number of months, but the gist, essentially, according to this report that the committee subsequently issues, is she effectively doesn't cooperate.
Mm-hmm.
Things deteriorate. According to the committee report, Judge Newman refused to accept service of orders issued by the committee and instructed the mailroom at her residence to refuse to accept the orders.
She's dodging service.
And I mean, theoretically, like, these are people you've worked with potentially for decades. I mean, at least years, but decades, right?
Yeah.
But I think the backdrop to all of this, and there's so much more detail in this report that the committee issued, is she's essentially like losing her mental faculties, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
April 20th, 2023, the investigation expands again because there had been some additional incidents. First, according to the committee report, Judge Newman started retaliating against the judicial assistant that had complained about the middle of the night phone calls. As a sort of interim solution, the court had moved his workstation outside her chambers, I think to like the court clerk's office. Like, hey, you're still mm-hmm. going to work for her, but let's at least give you some distance from the whole situation and this other like law clerk that's been harassing you. So according to the committee report and various affidavits, Judge Newman started telling her other staff that she intended to have the judicial assistant arrested or removed from the building.
Just some textbook retaliation.
In a phone call, she essentially told him he'd better get back to chambers within a few hours or she would deem him to have resigned.
Oh, geez.
Even though this interim solution of him working elsewhere is a part of this employment dispute resolution program, and it's essentially been authorized by the chief judge and the circuit itself. Second, another one of Judge Newman's law clerks apparently complained to her he didn't feel comfortable working on her personal defense in the competency investigation.
She was using her law clerks for that?
There's not really any detail in the report about this, but yeah, according to the report, this clerk complained about it, said, you know, this stuff is all taking a big toll on my mental health. I really want to be loaned out to different chambers. Like,
mm-hmm.
I think it's time for us to go our separate ways. And she apparently told him, you either stay with me or you resign.
Oh.
There are other incidents with the IT department where Judge Newman is accusing people in the court itself of hacking her devices, deleting files. And again, there's much more detail in the report, but it's very obvious. This is like, she's just not all there anymore.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, she's 96. The human brain doesn't work the way at 96 that it does at 35. That's science.
Well, yeah. And I won't attempt to armchair diagnose, but there are a lot of details in this report that, having had a grandmother who went through dementia, rang very familiar to me based on my experience. But you just read this kind of stuff, especially about what's going on with her computer and her email and all this kind of stuff. And it's just like, she's not, the mental acuity is, it just looks like it's not there. So in May, Judge Newman sues Chief Judge Kimberly Moore, Judge Sharon Prost, and Judge Richard Taranto, along with the Judicial Council of the Federal Circuit and all members thereof in federal court in D.C. And the claims for relief include something called improper removal, violation of separation of powers, the gist of which seems to be, if you want to remove me, Congress is going to have to impeach me.
I was about to say, is that basically that Congress has to do it?
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I got to be honest, I didn't read this too closely. Yeah. Skim this one.
We have now reached the maximum amount of my federal courts class that I did not take in law school. So I feel like there was something to do with Congress in there.
She also asserts Fifth Amendment and First Amendment violations. The district court has referred that case to mediation. Meanwhile, back at the federal circuit, the committee has interviewed more than 20 court staff members about Judge Newman. And on July 31st of this year, the committee issues its report, which, with all the exhibits and affidavits and emails, is almost 320 pages
long.
Holy
crap.
It includes an order that has been described in news media as suspending Judge Newman, but I'm not sure that's what it even does.
Mm-hmm.
It says, given the seriousness of Judge Newman's misconduct and the extensive evidence establishing at a minimum a reasonable basis for concern that Judge Newman suffers from a disability, the committee recommends that Judge Newman not be permitted to hear any cases not yet assigned to an authoring judge at the panel or en banc level, subject to consideration of renewal if the refusal to cooperate continues after that time. And they basically say they're going to do this for a year. Like, we're not assigning you any new cases for a year.
But she keeps all her current cases, so it's not like...
That's the thing, is that there's so much left unaddressed or unsaid by this report. So, okay, she's not going to hear new cases. Is she still getting a paycheck? Is she still supervising clerks and judicial office staff and making decisions about their employment? Like, what happens to her existing assigned cases? Are we just hoping for the best there? Yeah. So a lot that's unanswered by that order, but an apparent interim step to try and like rein things in. But here's why we're really here, because all of that is tremendously sad and an awful way for a seemingly very distinguished career to end. But remember that clerk, our friend who likes to dial in the middle of the night.
I want our late night caller clerk. Let's talk about them.
What piqued my interest in all of this, because honestly, like, what goes on at the federal circuit, that's none of my business.
Yeah, like, my practice will never reach there.
Yeah,
that's, so I don't have to worry
about
that.
It's not my business.
Yeah.
What piqued my interest in all of this was a reference in a news article I came across to the fact that Judge Newman's clerk took the Fifth in response to questioning by the committee. And I thought,
hey,
I thought that's weird. That's suspicious. But it is so much more bananas than I could have imagined.
Oh, good. I can't wait.
And for that reason, we're going to do a dramatic reading of portions of the law clerk's deposition transcript, because the committee included the deposition transcript in its entirety, in its public report.
Thank you. We love when people do this, by the way. Please keep including entire first source documents. We love it.
So there are a lot of names redacted in this transcript, but it looks like the chief judge and the other two judges on the committee were at this deposition, as well as the Federal Circuit's general counsel, Plus
that
the
is
clerk.
Bananas. That's bananas to have a deposition with that those people involved in it.
Oh. Buckle up. And the clerk and the clerk's lawyer. So she is represented by counsel at this deposition.
Okay.
Which also
not common.
On the one hand, I'm like, I guess that's smart. Because I thought, for example, when the Supreme Court claimed that it was investigating who leaked the Dobbs opinion, I was like, any of those clerks should get their own counsel.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, this feels really weird. So we're going to read this. I am going to be the chief judge who does most of the questioning. I will also play the roles of the clerk's lawyer, the general counsel, and all the other judges. And you get to be the clerk.
Are you going to use different voices for all the people? Please say yes.
No, I'm not that corny. I've done some embarrassing, shameful things on this pod. I'm not ready to go there yet.
Okay. I have the transcript in front of me. And just so everyone knows, I have not read this. So I'm going into this cold.
Yes. Although I did send it to you. Well, I sent it to you at like 5 o'clock and was like, here, take a look. All right. I am the chief judge of the Federal Circuit. How long have you been working with Judge Newman?
3 years and a few months.
We understand that you are her redacted clerk. Can you tell us about that role and what your responsibilities are?
I'm going to invoke my right under the Fifth Amendment to avoid self-incrimination.
You're refusing to tell us what your responsibilities are for Judge Newman?
I am invoking my privilege under the Fifth Amendment to avoid self-incrimination.
Do you manage or otherwise review the work of other clerks and chambers?
I, on the advice of counsel, am invoking my Fifth Amendment privilege to avoid self-incrimination.
How often do you come into the building?
On the advice of counsel, I am invoking my Fifth Amendment privilege.
Do you ever communicate with Judge Newman?
By the advice of counsel, I am invoking my Fifth Amendment privilege against self-incrimination.
How could you incriminate yourself if, by answering a question of whether you communicate with the person that you work for?
I'm going to invoke my right under the Fifth Amendment to avoid self-incrimination.
How could you incriminate yourself by answering a question about whether you communicate with the person that you report to?
I'm going to invoke my right against self-incrimination under the Fifth Amendment.
How often do you see Judge Newman in person?
I'm going to invoke my Fifth Amendment right.
Do you ever meet with her by Zoom?
Do you ever meet with her in a room? Do you ever meet with her with shoes? I am going to invoke my Fifth Amendment right.
Do you ever talk to her on the phone?
I am going to invoke my Fifth Amendment.
How are cases assigned in your chambers?
I'm going to invoke my Fifth Amendment right on that.
How many bench memos would you estimate that you have drafted for Judge Newman in the last year?
I'm going to invoke my Fifth Amendment.
Do you draft opinions for her?
I'm going to invoke my Fifth Amendment.
What's amazing to me is that there's not a place here where the judge just like lets out a primal scream.
Yeah. Like in the transcript, it's not like heavy sigh.
Yeah. This really is an impressive display of professionalism. Like, this is why I don't have a judicial temperament, because no. I would have absolutely lost my shit at this point.
Yeah, that's why you're not a judge, KP.
Yeah. That's why. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for recognizing that. Exactly. Okay, moving along. Okay, Chief Judge Moore, does Judge Newman discuss cases with you?
I'm not going to answer that.
Does Judge Newman discuss cases with you in advance of oral argument?
I'm going to invoke my Fifth Amendment.
Are you aware of any instances in which Judge Newman has offered an opinion with a disposition contrary to what was voted on by judges?
Oh my God. I'm going to invoke my Fifth Amendment.
Yeah, there are some very interesting questions in here.
There's a story behind that question.
Yeah, well, and the same stuff about coming into the building. I did see in another affidavit, one of her, I think it's the judicial assistant, says she only comes to the court like once a month or something. Otherwise, mm-hmm. she's working from home, which... I mean, me too, but
yeah, exactly. I'm not a federal judge.
Continuing, Judge Newman has 7 current cases assigned to her. I'm going to walk through each one and ask if you're working on that case. One of the cases is redacted. Are you currently working on that case?
Fifth Amendment.
And here, her lawyer jumps in and says, say the whole sentence, please.
On the advice of counsel, I invoke my Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination.
Counsel, could you explain why you are advising your client to refuse to answer the simplest of questions about her job? counsel. That's privileged. My communications with my client is privileged. Judge Moore, do you understand, redacted, that this is a proceeding that is involving our investigation into issues related to Judge Newman and it isn't an investigation into anything related to you?
I'm invoking my right against self-incrimination under the Fifth Amendment.
Do you understand that refusing to cooperate with this proceeding could result in a misconduct charge because you're obligated as a judicial employee to participate? And here her lawyer jumps in and says, objection, she is participating. You can answer.
Yes. Look, a question, an answer.
Yeah, she did it. Then Chief Judge Moore goes back to the cases and asks, are you working, refers to some case that's redacted and says, are you working on that?
On the advice of counsel, I am invoking my Fifth Amendment right to avoid self-incrimination.
How could you incriminate yourself by simply acknowledging whether you are working on any certain cases?
On advice of counsel, I am going to invoke my Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination.
On average, how many drafts of an opinion does Judge Newman receive before the opinion gets circulated to the panel?
That's an interesting question, again, with a story behind it. The witness, on advice of counsel, I am invoking my Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination.
Does Judge Newman have any physical health issues that you are aware of?
Oh. On advice of counsel, I am invoking my right under the Fifth Amendment for self-incrimination. How is that incriminating?
Oh, it's funny you ask, because Chief Judge Moore immediately asks, how could you incriminate yourself under the Fifth Amendment by telling us whether the judge has any health issues?
On advice of counsel, I am invoking my Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination.
Okay, and here, Judge Prost interjects, and there's been, we cut it out, but there's been a conversation earlier where the witness maybe suggests that there is a line of questioning where she won't respond by invoking her Fifth Amendment rights. So Judge Prost asks, can I interrupt and ask, I think you had said earlier that there might be a line of questioning in which you would not invoke the Fifth Amendment with respect to your duties, or did I misunderstand?
You did not misunderstand.
So there are certain things that you would be prepared to discuss in response to questions. So could you give us some indication about where that line is drawn to save us all a lot of time?
Until you ask a question, I can't answer that. It's like dealing with the Oracle in Delphi.
Well, at this point, this was one of my favorite exchanges. At this point, Chief Judge Moore, and why don't you be the lawyer here? Mm-hmm. You can be her lawyer. Chief Judge Moore says, why don't we take a 5-minute break?
And can I get your card?
I don't have a card.
Can I get a name?
Chief Judge Moore.
Okay.
Like, how do you show up to defend this deposition and you don't even know? Or you don't like, even introduce yourself
who's that,
beforehand?
Who's that dude doing the questioning? That's weird.
Well, and
this
Judge
was
Moore is a she.
Oh, this was an implicit bias, a subconscious bias of mine. Okay, I copped to it. As soon as I said he, I was like, oh, but damn it, I bet it's a woman too. So my bad, bad assumption on my part.
But good reminder for everybody, because I bet you're not the only one.
I'm not the only one. That is 100% on me for assuming that.
But I thought that was so funny. And like I said, I don't know how you sit down for that and you don't just say, I'm not familiar with everybody here. I'd like to make introductions. Can we do that before we get started?
Yes.
And who are the people sitting in this room?
And just walk in and be like, hi, I'm Jennifer Judge. Like, randos sitting in the room that are questioning my client.
Yeah. And then they go back on the record and her lawyer says, before we continue, I just want to know who that is at the end of the table. That's the one person my client doesn't know. And I think they're talking about the general counsel for the Federal Circuit. Continuing. Next, we have this conversation on the record between, it's redacted, but people, I assume one is the general counsel for the Federal Circuit and the other is her attorney. I will be the GC. Can you explain to us, I'm asking the attorney, when the Fifth Amendment can be invoked?
And I'm her attorney. The Fifth Amendment can be invoked in a civil case by a non-party.
I'm not asking what proceeding types it can be invoked in, but the basis on which it can be invoked.
It can be invoked when the non-party has a risk of self-incrimination.
A risk of self-incrimination in a criminal proceeding or evidence used against them, is that correct?
Evidence that can be used against them.
And can you try to explain on whatever basis you can, what reasonable basis would come up here?
I cannot at this time. It is just like, there's nothing there.
So awkward. And I, federal judges terrify me. So I cannot imagine. And pretty much everybody I know, and it's not a large sample size, but everybody I know who has been a clerk for a federal judge, especially at the circuit court level, takes their obligations so seriously.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's, I cannot wrap my mind around sitting down with the chief judge of your circuit, two other judges, and being like, Fifth Amendment, I take the fifth, yeah. I take the fifth, to basic questions about what you are doing at your job.
I still am having a hard time, and maybe you'll tell me, but I just can't wrap my mind around what would be incriminating or what the future concern is for needing to take the Fifth Amendment.
I can only speculate. I mean, I wondered about maybe misuse of government resources, yeah, or maybe this person isn't actually working that much because the judge isn't working that much, mm-hmm, but they've been collecting a full-time salary, or to the extent that they've been assisting on her personal defense in the competency, mm-hmm, evaluation, or they've been using federal resources to take her grocery shop. I mean, I don't know. I mean, who knows? We can only, yeah, speculate, but it's totally crazy. So then Chief Judge Moore asks the clerk, if I tell you right now, we will grant you immunity and not prosecute you, not find it to constitute an act of misconduct, whatever you tell us you have shared or not shared, would you be willing to answer questions then?
No, as the witness. But here, on one hand, I get that. On the other hand, like, it's not up to the judges to prosecute, right, them either. So it's not like you're not promising anything that can deliver, yeah, on anyway there. So
she doesn't really have authority to make that off. Yeah. But I think what they may be getting at is maybe if we need to involve other people, exactly, like from the DOJ and get, yeah, some sort of agreement, we can do that if you would be opening to considering it. And instead, the law clerk is like, no.
Nah.
And so Chief Judge Moore asks, why?
On advice of counsel, I am going to invoke my Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. I can't imagine what their blood pressure is in this deposition right now.
I feel like, is this real life?
Yeah.
Chief Judge Moore, there's no law that prevents you from sharing this information. It is just rules of our court that says you can't share confidential information. So if we're willing to grant you immunity, guarantee you will not be found guilty of misconduct for any acts of sharing that you may have participated in, why can't you answer these questions? And her lawyer says, objection, that goes to attorney-client privilege. But you can answer the, it goes to privilege, but you can answer.
On advice of counsel, I'm going to invoke my Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination.
And then I think this is the GC jumps back in and says, can you explain the basis for your right against invoking the privilege?
By advice of counsel, I'm going to invoke my Fifth Amendment.
Or can counsel explain the reason? And her lawyer says, no, not at this time. And the GC says, so there's no stated basis for invoking the privilege? Her lawyer, there is a basis. There is a basis, but the basis is what I've discussed with my client. So it's privileged and confidential, and I can't discuss it with you. And Chief Judge Moore says, but counsel, you're giving her advice not to answer questions in an investigation about a judge. It doesn't have anything to do with her. So can you explain to us why you're advising her not to answer these questions? And the lawyer says, not at this time.
I mean, on the one hand, I also get it, because how many people fuck up by providing information in an investigation that's not about them?
Yeah.
And open the door to liability somehow. But that's with, like we said, the DOJ or the FBI, it's the FBI interviewing you. And they just, like we always say, you need a lawyer. Don't go talk to the FBI. But at the same time, it's an investigation about a judge. It's not like...
I'm not sure she needs this lawyer.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It sure seems like they could have been a lot more prepared for this.
Mm-hmm.
They continue, Chief Judge Moore, has Judge Newman instructed you in any way about how to testify today?
Interesting question. Mm-hmm. I'm the witness. On advice of counsel, I would like to invoke my Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination.
Has Judge Newman asked you or encouraged you to talk about these proceedings with other people?
On advice of counsel, I'm going to invoke my Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination.
Do you understand that under the law, when you invoke a Fifth Amendment right to invoke self-incrimination, that allows a body to draw adverse inferences against you with regard to every question that you invoke the privilege?
Yes.
Have you ever stolen money from the court?
The way my eyes bugged out when I read that, as you were just speaking as Judge Newman. Or sorry, Judge Moore. All right, the witness. No.
So she does answer that one unequivocally. No. Yeah.
Amazingly. I wonder if she answers that. Well, no objection. Yeah. So no, she answers that unequivocally.
Yeah. Interesting. Do you ever perform any legal work related to any case here at the court?
I don't understand your question.
Do you ever work on any case here at the court?
Yes.
Do you work on any currently pending cases here at the court?
On advice of counsel, I'm going to invoke my Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination.
See, this suggests to me that we are collecting a paycheck, and I'm me now. Like, yeah. This suggests to me that we are collecting a paycheck without doing any work.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Chief Judge Moore continues, if you aren't working on any pending cases in front of the court, what are you doing?
On advice of counsel, I'm going to invoke my Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination.
I believe this is the GC who asks this. Have you ever discussed as a matter with anybody else outside the court the judicial proceedings, judicial disability proceedings?
On advice of counsel, I'm going to invoke my Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. One other thing, by the way, it would be a little harrowing to not only be in a deposition, but also these three people just like rapid firing questions at you. Like they're not like, oh, I'm taking all my questions and I'll reserve my time and I'll pass it to the GC. They're like just piping up at random and firing questions at this clerk.
But you could imagine a situation in which this is a much more conversational setting, and you've just got a court reporter there who's taking everything down, and you're under oath, but what's the problem with that? I mean, this shouldn't have been a big deal, right?
Oh no. It's just funny that on the one hand you have three federal judges and the GC of the federal circuit just like, each as they think of questions, they're just firing them at you, and you're like, I'm just gonna invoke my Fifth Amendment right.
Pulling a what would you say you do here on you.
Yes.
And then Chief Judge Moore asks, are there any circumstances that would permit you to answer the questions and not invoke your Fifth Amendment privilege as to the questions already asked?
I can't speculate.
I'm not asking you to speculate. I'm saying, what could we do to make this a cooperative proceeding? That's all I'm seeking.
I'm here. I'm answering those questions that I can answer.
But we asked some very basic questions about your duties in chambers, or whether you've drafted opinions, or whether you've written a bench memo, and these are typically jobs that all law clerks do, and you've refused to answer any of those questions, so I'm confused. Why? And the lawyer jumps in and says, and I'm just going to say again that this goes to her privileged communications with me, and she cannot answer related to anything that we have discussed, but you can answer her question.
There was no question.
Actually, it was. Why? Why are you refusing to answer any questions about your job duties in chambers?
On advice of counsel, I'm going to invoke my Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination.
Judge Prost jumps in. Is there a telework policy in your chambers?
On advice of counsel, I'm going to invoke my Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. Oh, Chief, here we go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Chief Judge Moore, how many hours a week do you work?
40 to 100.
And is that 40 to 100 for work you do for judicial matters here at the court?
Yes.
And is that work typically performed in person, in chambers, or elsewhere?
On advice of counsel, I'm going to invoke my Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination.
You've indicated that you work 40 to 100 hours a week for judicial matters here at the court. Can you give us any examples of work you've done in the last week?
On advice of counsel, I'm going to invoke my Fifth Amendment right under self-incrimination.
Can you give us any examples of work you've done in the last year?
On advice of counsel, I'm going to invoke my Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination.
What do you spend the 40 to 100 hours a week doing?
On advice of counsel, I'm going to invoke my Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. Interesting.
Pretty wild. Mm-hmm. And that essentially is the end of it. Mm-hmm. And they end it. So that's what caught my eye, and my eyes almost jumped out of my head reading this because I just can't believe the gall it takes. And what are you trying to hide if this is the approach, if you take in an official workplace investigation at a federal court in response to questioning under oath by the chief judge and two other judges of that court? What have you been up to, or not up to, as the case may be?
I was about to say, I have come around to you in reading that. I'm like, what was she or they up, not up to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
clearly they needed wake-up calls, whatever they were doing, but who knows?
I know. I mean, why do you need the 6 a.m. wake-up call if you're not actually doing any work? Because yes. Because you got to get out and, like, go row and do a jog or something. And, you know, you got to meet your friends for brunchies. I don't know.
Reformer class, yes.
I don't know. So I will certainly be keeping an eye on that because this definitely is not going to be the end of things. Like I said, Judge Newman's lawsuit against the judges is currently in mediation. I would hope that that gets resolved. Mm-hmm. And then we'll see if they do anything else that's public about Judge Newman or people who are employed by her who have raised questions by their refusal to answer questions about what they have been doing.
That's fascinating. It's also a fascinating choice that the it's in the investigative report in full, given everything in there. That's a choice to include it.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to switch gears in a big way now.
Yeah. So our next story, I think you and I were both pretty shocked when we heard about our next story. And that's probably why it absolutely took off, at least on my social media. And I think, you know, our TikTok For You pages are basically the same. So I have a feeling it took off on yours too. And it was absolutely dominating my social media until the Alabama boat brawl, which then took over 100% of my social media. And we're not mad about that because it's been outstanding. Amazing.
Incredible Amazing. Content.
But what I'm talking about is the recent lawsuit filed against Lizzo by three of her former backup dancers. And I saw, you know, the backup dancers and their lawyer. They are obviously litigating it in the press first because they released, you know, press releases about it. And we found out all about this before the complaint was ever even filed. So we found out about these allegations, not the specific ones, but basically that they would be filing this complaint. And then they filed the complaint. And so the suit specifically raises claims for sexual harassment, hostile work environment, religious harassment, racial harassment, disability discrimination, assault, and false imprisonment. So I kind of dove in, I read through it, and it's interesting. And I have thoughts, and I'm very curious to hear your thoughts as we go through it, because we both have some experience dealing with not claims like these, but claims under the law like these. Well, I won't speak for you. Maybe you've dealt with claims like these.
No, I already know I haven't. Continue. Okay. I haven't seen very much about this, but I have seen some things, which I'm very intrigued to see how you're going to handle.
Yes.
And I can categorically tell you I have not experienced this.
And I hadn't read the complaint yet. I just knew, like, the bare allegations when you were like, you should do Lizzo. And I was like, yeah, I'll do Lizzo. And then I read the complaint and I was like, God damn it. And so
it was a trap.
It's a trap. So the complaint is filed against Lizzo's tour company where these dancers were employees, Lizzo herself, Shirlene Quigley, who was the dance team captain, and then various John and Jane Does 1 through 10. We start with when they all meet. The plaintiffs were contestants on a reality show called Watch Out for the Big Girls, where dancers competed for spots on Lizzo's tour as dancers. And I didn't even know the show existed, but it was on Amazon Prime. And it was a competition reality show. As part of the tryout process, the contestants had psychological examinations to ensure that they could withstand basically the tryout process and then the rigor of basically a worldwide tour and dealing with all the stress. And one of the dancers disclosed to the psychologist in this examination, and she alleges it was disclosed to Lizzo and her company, that the dancer suffered from anxiety, depression, and an eating disorder. So before she was ever on the show, she disclosed those things to a psychologist. So the dancers begin filming the reality show, and they allege that this Shirlene Quigley, who was a judge, and again, the dance captain of Lizzo's dancers, was an extremely vocal Christian and, quote, took every opportunity to proselytize to any and all in her presence, regardless of protestations. And they go through and describe several times that this woman allegedly was preaching, trying to convert these people, and, you know, aggressively proselytizing about her Christian faith to the dancers and basically anyone that would listen. allegedly during the filming of the show, Shirlene found out that one of the plaintiff dancers was, maybe still is, we don't know, but at the time was a virgin, and allegedly would bring up the dancer's virginity multiple times in conversations with the dancer and with everyone else around.
Yuck.
It's awkward. And there's an allegation that Shirlene Quigley also put it on social media about this woman. And
what, like, why?
One, that's why?
So weird.
But two, they just say that she put it on social media. But the, what I'm curious about is they don't say where or how. There's no screenshot. They don't say, like,
yeah,
it's on Instagram. It's on Twitter. Like, what does that mean? That she put that on social media. So that was an interesting area where there was just an absolute lack of details, where there were so many other details. So anyway, that stood out to me. So we'll have to see what that actually means. One of the dancers was very uncomfortable with the idea that these contestants, they were going to do a publicity shoot for the show, and it would be in the nude, you know, and so they would have this, and it would be tasteful. They wouldn't be showing anything, but in to get the shot, you would have to be nude. And she felt extremely uncomfortable and anxious about that. And ultimately, she was able to participate in a nude bra and underwear. But at the time, was very anxious, basically feeling like, you know, if I don't do this, then I'm not going to make it and get this job opportunity that I've been trying out for, which I understand the stress. But ultimately, she was able to participate and was able to wear a bra and underwear. The main thing that I took away from this complaint, once we really dive into it, is the absolute lack of an HR department or functional HR department in Lizzo's management company.
That's 0% surprising.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, absolutely. It's a case study in what goes awry when you have no one that functions in some form as HR for, you know, a group of people working together. The dancers alleged that Shirlene continued to proselytize to the group. The dancers were all three of them chosen. They make it from the show. They're touring with Lizzo at this point. And Shirlene especially would comment about how she didn't believe in premarital sex. And she would constantly say things like, quote, "Masturbating is against my religion, but today I had an oopsie."
Ew. Oh, yeah. God, I hope that's not true.
Like, isn't that disgusting?
Well, and how do you, I'm sorry, I'm trying to reconcile saying something like that with going around constantly proselytizing somebody to join the Christian faith. Like, okay, somebody's going to have to explain to me why.
I mean, I was raised in a very deep Christian faith and I can't do it, so I don't know. And I can honestly say also, at least in the past 10 years, other than when it was part of like an actual investigation or work, I'm not talking about masturbation at work. Like, that's not a thing that naturally comes up in my work conversations.
No.
No. Mm-hmm. Shirlene, though, unlike us, continued to share her sexual fantasies with the dance team.
Allegedly.
So apparently the entire team knew that she had a sexual fantasy of, quote, having 10 penises on her face. Which is vivid language.
I'm deeply regretting suggesting this as a topic. We have made a tremendous mistake.
This was all you, KP.
But I have terrible judgment, so why would you let me do something like this?
I was literally reading it and typing this, and I was like, oh, she's going to regret it. I told you before I even started this, I was like, I was nice. I'm not making you read portions of this.
No, unseen. I wouldn't have read this.
I know. You would have refused.
I would have, like, hard pass.
Because 10 penises on her face is not a phrase I thought I'd say on a podcast.
And here we are. Look at all the doors this podcast is open for us.
You never know where life will lead you. Allegedly, before rehearsals and performances, Shirlene would make the dance team pray together. And it would be a lot like, allegedly, it's a lot like Coach Joe Kennedy from that Supreme Court case, where the dancers basically say, it wasn't required, quote unquote, for us to pray together with her before the game. But attendance was noted, essentially, who was there. And one of the dancers was not Christian. And repeatedly, Shirlene would allegedly tell her, you know, it's your turn to lead the prayer. And the dancer would say, no, thank you. I'm not interested. And it happened all the time. And every time the dancer would say, I'm not Christian. I'm not interested. So it was just extremely, allegedly, very pushy on pushing this religion, pushing this prayer on, you know, non-Christians, and whether you're welcome, and even if you're Christian, that may not be welcome to you.
That may not be your thing.
Exactly.
I don't know. People practice their religions in a lot of different ways, and it may not be your thing to hold hands and pray with your colleagues every day.
Exactly. Exactly. Once we hit paragraph 32, the actual allegations about Lizzo's behavior to these dancers begin. So the plaintiffs claim that Lizzo would invite her crew and her dancers out with her after shows and when they're rehearsing, and that those that accepted those invites and would attend these things with her were favored and would have more job security and basically became, you know, much closer to her. Like, basically like any boss that does that kind of stuff. Like, if you're going to go hang out with the boss, you're going to be closer and you're going to have better job opportunities and you're going to have a better relationship with them.
Yeah, but sometimes it really sucks hanging out with the boss and you don't
exactly.
like it.
Exactly. Yeah. And sometimes you don't want to. And sometimes, you know, it's just like some bro at a law firm and, you know, they and their bro bosses go play golf. Like, that's an opportunity that they get to bond together. And, you know, if you don't play golf, then you're kind of stuck out on the side on that.
Or they go to strip clubs. I mean,
yeah,
that's
exactly.
Certainly not unheard of.
Certainly not unheard of. So the dancers allege there's this entire dynamic going on. They're out after a concert, and the dancers are out already, the three of them, with one of the backup singers celebrating themselves. And they find out that Lizzo has invited them and wants them to join her for the night out in Amsterdam. And so they eventually accept. And it turns out you're heavy breathing because you know where this is going.
I'm sighing, yes, because, yeah.
They eventually accept, and it turns out Lizzo has allegedly invited everyone to a nude club in the red light district in Amsterdam, where they would be physically interacting with the nude performers.
I've reached my limit here, and we are going to edit this. Because we've finally reached the brink of what I can handle. So what happened then?
So they are interacting with these nude performers in the red light district, and the performers are engaging in interactive displays of sexual things, I'll just say. And they're not performing sex, they're doing feats, I'll say. And so
feats of strength. They're doing sex related. You can go look yourself in the complaint.
Exactly. The complaint is a public document. If you want to go find it, there's some vivid imagery in there if you want to.
It's burned into my brain.
Exactly. So they are doing this. And again, not things I ever thought I'd talk about on a podcast, but allegedly at one point, Lizzo pressures one of the dancers to touch the chest of one of the nude female performers and gets the entire group to basically chant, "Do it," over and over and over until the dancer acquiesces, because at that point it's weird if you don't do it. You know, you're obviously pressured. You're in a group of people. You don't want to be like the weird person standing out on that. So she acquiesces and does it and feels awful about it afterwards. Another night in Paris, allegedly Lizzo invited her dancers to a nude cabaret bar and told her dancers that they may be inspired by what they saw there for their future performances. But the plaintiffs do concede that this performance was, quote, artful and
okay.
It was nice. So there. That
there. Oh, delightful.
Yes.
Okay. Sure.
After a few months from then, the relationship between Lizzo and the dancers sours. Lizzo allegedly makes them all retry out for their positions after a long rehearsal without any notice. And basically, they're supposed to have this 8-hour rehearsal. Lizzo makes them stay allegedly for 12 hours without a break, retrying out for their positions. The next day, Lizzo allegedly accused the dancers of drinking alcohol before performances and, you know, was chastising them for these crappy performances and saying, you know, y'all need to stop getting drunk before you perform for me.
Do we know why the relationship sours?
That's just kind of where it starts souring, apparently.
Okay.
She thinks they're not doing
why.
A good enough
okay.
job, allegedly, and she thinks they're drinking before performances, but they don't really explain, you know, what led to that point. So she accuses them of drinking before performances, and one of the plaintiff's dancers speaks up and says, no, that doesn't happen. And Shirlene Quigley at that point is like, no, none of my dancers drink. Like, that's not a thing that happens. And apparently, allegedly, Lizzo was very sarcastic in response to them about that. It was basically like, well, good for y'all, and stormed out, allegedly. That same day, the dancer who had previously disclosed her history of anxiety and depression and an eating disorder was called into a meeting with Lizzo and several others of her management, and they asked her if she was struggling because the dancer seemed more downcast and not nearly as peppy and fun as usual. The dancer took these comments to mean they were slights against her weight and inappropriate questions about her mental health. And so, again, she feels very pressured by this constant questioning, and she tells Lizzo about her ED and mental health issues. And Lizzo offered her time off from rehearsals to attend therapy sessions, but the dancer, you know, in the complaint says, listen, I couldn't accept those therapy sessions or miss rehearsals because then I'd be missing rehearsal. And it's not like I'm going to be able to perform. Yeah. So I can't accept that. That's not an offer I can accept. Not long after that meeting, Lizzo terminates the dancer that spoke up when they discussed the drinking before performances. But it's not Lizzo that terminates her. She has one of her managers terminate the woman in a lobby in a hotel while they're on tour, which is not a best practice for terminating employees, just as an FYI.
I guess, but where else are you going to do it? I mean, you're on tour.
But not in a lobby.
Preferably not in a lobby.
In front of all the other dancers.
Well, sure. Yeah. Obviously not in a public place. But.
No. She questions why Lizzo isn't the one terminating her, and the management personnel allegedly says Lizzo isn't the best with these things, and she has a lot going on, and then tells her that Lizzo tends to be snarky, so they don't let her do these terminations.
I mean, that all seems pretty, honestly, that seems pretty fair to me. Like, you usually don't have your CEO participating in terminations. And
no, exactly. Yeah. The next day, the dancers, the remaining ones, meet with Lizzo, and allegedly she discussed that termination with them, and she reminded her dancers that she has, quote, eyes and ears everywhere and is watching them. One of the plaintiff dancers recorded that meeting on her phone, she said, so she could review it later. Because the beginning of the meeting was chastising them about this, and the second part was allegedly providing, you know, notes on their last performance. So she says she recorded it to watch the notes afterwards. The next day, the dancers come in for a wardrobe fitting, and as they're in there, all their phones are confiscated by security, and Lizzo storms in and tells them that she knows one of them has recorded the prior day's meeting, and she's going to find out and interrogate each one of them until she figures out who recorded her in the meeting the day before. Allegedly. Yep. Allegedly, she's furious and cursing, and the dancer who recorded the meeting eventually fesses up, and she tells Lizzo that she recorded it so she would be able to review it later, and that she had deleted it from her phone already. She'd basically watched it and deleted it already. Lizzo tells her, there's no way, I trust you, and fires her right at that point. Mm-hmm. And then the third dancer who is watching all this tells Lizzo that she doesn't appreciate the other dancers, how the other dancers were treated, and she resigns on the spot as well. Mm-hmm. So that's the three plaintiffs. You know, two have resigned, or one has resigned and two is fired. Allegedly, at that point, Lizzo cracks her knuckles and aggressively approaches the dancer, saying, you're lucky, you're so fucking lucky. And then allegedly, like, security has to come in and, you know, drag her away from the dancer, like she's going to beat up this dancer. Hmm. As the dancer left, she allegedly, Lizzo gave her the middle finger and said, bye, bitch, which actually I could see. Like, that was the one thing where I was like, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying do this in an office setting, but I don't know that I care that much that Lizzo's doing stuff like that, aside from, you know, you maybe want somebody to not be rude and be a little more professional. But what do we think happens on music tours?
Like, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
These people don't work office jobs. They don't get training, probably, and like, how to have difficult conversations with your coworkers.
Like EQ and management and you. So they're not having these. So it that's where the complaint ends, essentially. And they, you know, they go through the allegations and what they think relate to the causes of action. But generally, based on the social media explosion about it and then the complaint itself, thoughts, KP?
Well, how did Lizzo respond? Because she put out a statement, right?
Yes. And her statement was essentially, it's not true, and how dare these women make me look bad, was basically what the statement said.
I'm not even sure I really got a firm it's not true from the statement.
No, that's fair.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was really long, and I thought kind of meandering, and I sort of had a, you know, too long, but good luck with all that moment looking at it, where I didn't even read it that closely, because I was just like, you know, if none of this happened, I would expect just a very unequivocal upfront denial.
Yeah.
But instead, there was a lot of like, you know, I'm human and I make mistakes. And it's like, well, what kind of mistakes? Like in new clubs in Amsterdam or like with a dancer manager who's making extremely inappropriate comments and proselytizing people, like those kind of mistakes? Or what are we talking about here? So it didn't read to me as a real denial or defense of herself.
And the very end of it, you know, she was like, I am a role model and people look up to me and I've made, you know, this movement about body positivity. And basically, I'm not going to let them take it away from me, which was a little aggressive, I thought, for a statement. So to each their own. I thought it was slightly aggressive as her response to that as well.
I don't know if I read it as aggressive, but overall, my takeaway is, yeah, the allegations are extremely disappointing for somebody who positions herself as like a sex positive, body positive, accepting person who we've talked about creates a pretty safe space at her concerts.
Yes.
For the girls, gays, and theys. And we'll see what shakes out of all this. I always, one of my little mantras is never trust your faves.
Mm-hmm.
Never trust your faves. You can never trust these people because they, you know, sorry to go about this way in the world, but you put people up on a pedestal and they will disappoint you by doing fucked up shit like this, allegedly.
No, I agree completely. The one allegation that did make me chuckle in this, I didn't go over it, but they claim that, you know, sexually explicit music was played and that created a hostile work environment. And I was like, girl, it's Lizzo.
What is her music if not sexually explicit? Like,
yeah, like I think I love her music, but I think we can all agree there's a lot of it that's pretty sexually explicit.
Right.
So that one made me chuckle. I don't know how far that's going to get you, you know, as a dancer for Lizzo. It was interesting to me too. You know, there are some very few states that have weight as a, you know, protected category. I don't know if California is one of them. So it's kind of interesting that so much of the pre-complaint release was about, you know, Lizzo was weight shaming and, you know, she doesn't believe in body positivity and all this stuff. But it's not like that's not a cause of action that they can pursue in this. So you can tell at that point that there's a lot of strategy here where were it not for other things in the news, we might still be talking about the Lizzo issues. And is she actually, you know, walking the walk and talking the talk.
Well, and I think maybe the point there is, you know, the longer this draws out, the more we're going to talk about how your reputation doesn't match your actions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, forget whether there's an actionable claim here. We're going to talk to the press all day long.
Yeah, and that's exactly right.
The longer it draws out. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens.
Yep. So we will keep an eye on that one as well. It's in state court in California.
Oh, fun.
So, yep. So we will keep an eye on that one. And I think I have our next episode. I have like two stories that I'm noodling around. So I haven't committed to one yet. So TBD on that. I have two ones that like I have a lot of windows open. So I'm doing the research.
Oh, you're in it. Yeah.
I'm in it. And that's the fun part. So I think I found a good one. So we will see what that is next week.
Yay. I'm excited.
Well, that is it, guys, for this week. Thank you so much for listening again. As always, please rate us, leave a review. We have merch in our description of the episode. Please check out all of our merch. And thank you again for listening every week. We really appreciate it.
Yep. And you can always shoot us tips at badlawyerpod@gmail.com. We appreciate the emails. Love the tips. We'll be back soon.